Okay, the recorder's on. This is World Affairs Monthly, and I have on the line today Mrs. Gail Tverberg. She's the publisher of OurFiniteWorld.com. She's very well known and very famous, and she's basically an energy analyst. We've talked a number of times. If you go to my websites and put her first name or last name in the search engine, you'll pick up the interviews. We probably did three or four, something like that. I recently saw one of her latest, which is published December 15th, 2023, at her website, 10 Things That Change Without Fossil Fuels. Gail, it was great. I read that article. I laughed, and I thought, hey, that's really perfect, Gail. Now, really cool. Now,
Vero had it copied over with a slightly different heading.
Yeah, perfect. Okay. Now, I just wanted to bring up this fact. And now, not that I'm disagreeing with you, but I just wanted to mention that, I think it was back in 2019, Wall Street Journal published an article saying that the fracking business, in Texas mostly, maybe North Dakota, whatever, in the United States, was possibly going to not do very well. And they would need to drill a lot more wells. And the cost of doing that was going to be high. And, they were just saying that, this is not too good. And then, of course, since then, we've seen actually an increase. I think I read today just now preparing for this interview that I think it's about 8 million barrels a day is coming from shale oil or, tidal oil fracking, hydraulic fracturing. And I found an article in CNN, and I'm not, terribly fond of CNN, but they're stating the facts. It's titled, "The United States is Producing More Oil Than Any Country in History." And as the world grapples with the existential crisis of climate change, which is kind of a joke, environmental activists want President Joe Biden to phase out the oil industry. Blah, blah, blah. Okay. The United States is set to produce a global record of 13.3 million barrels a day of crude and condensate during the fourth quarter of this year. All right, so, and then it looks like we're doing better than ever in terms of production. And now, I just thought I'd, first ask you, give me your take on what's going on in the fracturing business and, how well they're doing and just sort of relieve me of this fear that, actually fracking could be pretty darn good.
Well, it's done pretty well for us, and there's a lot of disagreement as to exactly how it's doing right now. The little companies have been selling out to the bigger companies, and they've been merging together, and you don't know whether, say, the big companies have some ideas that they could really jack up their production or what. I hear some dinging going on in the
background. I'm sorry, my wife is calling me. I apologize. Yeah, go ahead.
So you don't know if they have something in their sleeves. What happens is that the percentage recovery of oil or of natural gas is always pretty low. Mm-hmm. And if anybody can figure out a way to get a higher percentage out, that can really jack up the amount that's extracted, and it can lower the cost of extraction.
Yeah, okay.
And so things that didn't look like they were very promising can be drilled, and so areas that look like they were poor maybe can become productive,
okay.
And maybe the old wells can do better.
Mm-hmm.
So I am always hesitant until I actually see it to say this is necessarily going down, because we don't know. It's the kind of thing that might possibly go up, but it's not, it's for sure, not a sure thing. Let's put it that way.
So I think it was 2019, like I said, in Wall Street Journal, they were pessimistic. And I think, they were basically saying, maybe you remember the article I'm referring to, but they were arguing that that the hyper increases in production of the past 7-8 years were unlikely to be replicated. And if they pushed that and tried to get that replication, they would see a collapse in the production. That was that's what I remember.
Yeah, I think, is that right? Right. I mean, it's hard to see that it can suddenly go up from here, from what we know that's gone on.
Okay.
But at the same time, it's the kind of thing that there's always a relatively large amount that's out there, and we're getting, you know, if we're getting 10% back, mm-hmm. you know, if you can get that up to 12% or 15%, then you're suddenly in great shape.
Right.
So, you know, I'm always hesitant to say that because it hasn't been done before, it can't be done.
Yeah, of course. Well, given the circumstances that we find ourselves in now, you know, we are, the frackers are doing pretty well. What would you say is likely to happen in the future? I mean, are you still, you know, fairly bearish on oil production, or are you starting to say, well, wait a minute, you know, eventually it's going to come, but it's a far off in the future?
Well, let's put it this way. The stuff they're getting is this tight oil from shale. It doesn't give us diesel.
Yeah.
To any significant extent. That's what we have a shortage of.
True.
And so it really isn't giving us the right thing.
Okay.
And, of course, when they talk about the U.S. having the highest production of oil in history or whatever it is, they mean liquids, not oil.
Right.
And liquids includes this natural gas liquids.
I see.
Which is a lot of stuff that is, you know, bottled gas and whatnot all.
Okay.
It doesn't qualify as oil for most of us.
I see.
So, oil is down.
I see. So the production of crude oil is actually down?
Yeah, the high point was in 2018.
I see. Okay. So when they say 13.3 million, they're including all this other stuff, obviously.
No, the 13.3 is the crude.
Oh, the crude.
And the 20, or
whatever. Oh, the 20. Okay. Okay. Right.
Is the liquids.
Okay.
And the liquids has all kinds of junk in it.
Right.
That
okay.
you wouldn't normally, you know, refinery expansion. You know, this
yeah.
isn't, some, well, they use our natural gas to get the refinery expansion.
Sure.
But it still is not crude oil that we extracted.
Several years ago, had I asked you, I probably did, sorry about the cough, if I had been talking to you about the future of fracking, would you be surprised to hear that it's done so well since we talked?
Well, you know, it dropped way back in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if the price goes down, they quit and go home.
Yeah.
And so it depends on whether you can keep the price up long enough. And
right.
And then, of course, there is this thing I was just saying about innovation. So if you can get a little innovation in there and you can get the price up, you know, things can work out, but it goes and fits and starts. Mm-hmm. You know, in the whole scheme of things, it's not nearly as big as you would think
mm-hmm.
because it's just U.S. pretty much that's doing this.
Yeah. You know what, Gail, we're going back to our old argument that, you know, there's a lot of oil, but can you get it out of the ground and, you know, get it to the customer, and does the customer find it affordable, right? Isn't that
right,
the, that's
exactly.
The, that's exactly what we've been talking about for 10 years.
Right, right.
Yeah. So we're not talking about anything new.
No.
Yeah.
And it's better than average for giving us something that's useful for gasoline. It just doesn't give us diesel.
Now, explain that. So you're saying that a lot of the crude that we have right now is not easily producing diesel?
Right, right. Well, the U.S. has.
Okay.
The U.S. has always had fairly light oil.
Okay.
And the light oil is the part that gives you gasoline, which is the thing that our cars run on. And Russia particularly has produced something that produces diesel.
I see.
And Europe, being close to Russia, has depended upon their blended oil from the pipelines, which gave them lots of diesel.
Mm-hmm.
So okay. once they lost that, they were in tough shape.
Right, right. So we're just more geared up for producing gasoline rather than diesel. Because
right,
we, yeah, okay,
right.
Got you. Okay.
And the shale oil is what keeps our gasoline going, but it doesn't really help the diesel.
Okay.
We have to import, you know, stuff from the oil sands or stuff from Venezuela or from Russia, or I guess there's some from Saudi Arabia. There's different places that have the heavy oil.
Right. And now the other thing that we used to talk about, and I'm kind of I'm having fun here, is that, you know, the Biden administration wants to, you know, just end the oil industry. And you and I used to laugh. And of course, it was a kind of a strange laugh because we're asking ourselves, what is wrong with these people? But that was the point of your article. And I'm asking again, can you explain, Gail, why this these people are so crazy? I mean, it's beyond crazy. How could we do without the oil and gas industry?
How can we do without? I don't know. It's just, it's craziness. They have to, you know, this green energy stuff really doesn't work well at all.
No.
And it can't work without, you have to have the oil and coal, especially. Natural gas you could probably almost live without.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to have the things that are easy to transport and very easy to store.
Exactly.
And produce the high temperatures you need.
So our way of life would just cease to exist. I mean, we'd all be, you know, poor and living on the farm, like you say, and it would be dreadful. People be probably dying of cold and, I mean, of ill health,
right.
of disease. So I don't know. I mean, when I was a kid, if you and I were talking, I'm 65, but if you and I were talking in high school and I say, hey, Gail, how you doing? And someone told us in 2024, they're going to be talking, the president of the United States is going to be talking about doing away with the oil and gas industry. I don't know what you and I would have thought. I don't think that we would have believed them.
Well, they haven't. The schools have not been at all forthcoming in explaining to people how important these industries are.
Yeah.
You know, they have done their best to kind of hide the problem.
To hide it, yeah. Now, and what, I'm so sorry about the cough. What is the agenda, do you think? Are they just crazy, or is there some sort of hidden agenda?
Well, I think you have to have a narrative you can tell the people, or you have to have multiple narratives maybe, but you have to have a narrative that has a happily ever after ending.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and also you have to provide jobs for people. So even if these jobs do nothing other than absorb debt, you know, they provide something or other to the economy.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they can talk about clean energy as being wonderful and they can use the government to add lots and lots of debt, then that gives them a way to keep the universities full and operating. And it gives the students something to aim for and the book publishers something to write about.
Okay.
And everything looks great.
Mm-hmm.
You just can't tell exactly when things are going to fall apart and in what way they're going to fall apart.
Well, if the fracking business continues to do well and produces more and more crude, then obviously we're going to be okay. But the minute the fracking business...
Not obvious we're going to be okay.
Yeah.
It's just that that particular piece of it is sort of okay.
All right.
But what we're short of is diesel.
Yeah.
And we're in international trade.
True.
And those things are not not the same.
Well, that's true because 3 or 4 years ago, 5 years ago, I own some diesel trucks and some Volkswagen diesel vehicles. And, of course, the diesel vehicle is about 40% more efficient, 40-50% more efficient in terms of a mile per gallon than gasoline. Anyway, so I would recall the pump price being, like here in California, being about $3.50. It was always lower than the than the premium gasoline, because we have some BMWs too, and so it was always lower. And then it was about correct me if I'm wrong, maybe about a year and a half or 2 years ago, the price of diesel shot up.
Right.
I was asking myself, Tom, what is going on here? So what do you think? What would you say?
When I've looked at it, what happened is that there's a lot of very heavy oil, you know, the stuff from Canada and some of this other, that, you know, you can make it into different things. It can have, you know, asphalt coming out and some of these very, very heavy things. And you can crack those molecules, and you can make that into diesel. Mm. And so what was happening was that, and some of this crummy oil was used as, what do they call it, bunker fuel for your ships. And at any rate, what happened is that about, you know, leading up to 2008, in that period, they suddenly said, oh, maybe we should be refining this into diesel and things like that.
I see.
But we kept adding more and more, and we kept refining a bigger and bigger percentage of the stuff that came out. And so we were able to get more diesel out, you know, and that kept the supply going.
Okay.
But it's been recently, and the diesel and the jet fuel are very similar.
Yeah.
Okay. And so when one gets short, the other gets short.
I see.
And by 2020, there was really a shortage there.
I see.
And, you know, shutting off, having everybody stay at home really helped the system.
I see, yeah.
Because then the jet fuel, the demand for that went way down, so there was more diesel for the farms.
Okay.
Well, and for the big trucks and whatever all else.
Okay. So now, has the demand for diesel increased more than regular gasoline distillates?
Well, I don't know that it... Well, we were saying that the whole supply, as I was telling you, the crude oil was at its high point in 2018.
Hmm.
And the world population has been going up since
2018.
Okay, sure. Yeah. And so we're talking about the total amount from this crude has gone down.
Right.
The crude per population is becoming tighter and tighter.
Yes.
And we've been adding this fracked oil, which is a very light oil, which gives us gasoline, but it doesn't grow us food.
Right. Right. Okay. So, of course, the population, in your opinion, is growing faster than the resource base.
The resource base is going down. I just
going
told
down,
you
yeah.
that 2018
yeah.
was the peak.
Right.
We're now, 6 years beyond that.
Right. Okay.
But it wasn't, yeah. Of the crude oil.
Right, right. But we're not seeing the price skyrocket as a...
The
as
price
a
doesn't go up that way. You know, there's
yeah.
this belief that the price will skyrocket and that will allow us
okay,
to get
we,
more
yeah.
out.
We've talked about this before.
False.
Right,
yeah.
right. So basically you're saying that the price goes up and then, of course, it cannot go up, so it falls, and demand simply languishes.
Well, it's because, yeah, what happens is the price goes up and the food price goes up because you use this in preparing your food.
Right.
And the politicians suddenly go,
yeah.
No, you can't do that.
Right. Okay.
And so what happens is that they cut off using the airlines or whatever else
yeah.
it takes
yeah.
in order to get it to come in balance.
Yeah.
But Europe, with all of its cars on diesel, is really one that's had a disproportionate share of the use of diesel.
Right. Okay.
And so they are in worse shape than a lot of other places.
I see. So you're basically saying then that the price at the pump is not really a reflection of what's going on.
Well, this idea that the price rises because of higher demand is this nonsense.
Yeah.
That these people have put out. It's the... There's more dimensions to that. The
yeah.
the demand comes from it comes from what you can buy with it.
Okay.
And who has that money?
That's right. Okay.
And the money is not distributed properly. It's that what you have when there's not enough to go around is poor people get virtually nothing.
So, Gail, you would probably agree with me that inflation is here to stay. It has fallen.
I think that's likely. Oh, whether it's fallen or not, it depends on which of the many different measures you use and over what time period.
Sure.
But I agree with you. It is not falling. It's going, we're going to have a problem where whatever happens, we're going to find less and less output of goods and services.
Sure, absolutely. And, of course, higher prices for those things that we want to buy.
Well, it might not be higher prices.
Oh, okay.
It might be some people who are starved out.
I see. Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily have to be higher prices.
Okay.
It's something that there's people who are homeless now. You know, we end up with more homeless people.
I see. Okay, right.
It doesn't work out the way you'd like to think it would.
Right. So, yeah, you're You're admitting that just because people have money doesn't mean they can buy the stuff. I mean, the stuff has to be affordable, has to be within reach.
Well, what happens is that you get, you've got these, have the Bill Gates who, he's got however many dollars and he gets a few more dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, is he going to eat any more food because he's got a few more dollars?
Mm-hmm.
Bill Gates is only going to eat the same amount of food he ate before.
Yeah.
The demand for food, it depends on what the low wage people are getting.
Right. Okay.
And if they can't afford food, they're not going to buy steak.
Yeah.
They're going to buy whatever they can get. And so they will cut way back on what they're buying. And that affects diesel and some of these things more than the others. And I think also some of the speculating works into it, too.
Mm.
But it's still, it doesn't work the way you would think it would.
Right.
It's not like you can, take your car over to this local gas station and honk your horn for a while.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't get you anywhere.
Right. Now, in your opinion, based on the numbers and the facts that you have at your computer there and your experience in daily life, is the economy doing okay or is it slowly falling?
Well, it's maybe what I should say is hollowing out.
Mm-hmm.
Or, I saw a presentation where they talked about a rock being hit and little fissures and little cracks coming in the inside, and if it got hit more and more, eventually there'd be an earthquake. But what happens is that it's somehow or other getting it's getting disturbed in ways that are not as obvious as you can see.
Okay.
It's that a lot of people are working two or three part-time jobs,
right.
Or the job that they have, they're a real estate broker and they're selling few houses and they're not getting as much real estate commission or, whatever different kinds of things that are going wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that kind of thing that's messing up the situation.
I see. So effectively, living standards, in your opinion, are not increasing, they're falling.
I think that's the direction we're going. We're already at the, and it's not the Bill Gates living standards. Maybe his is increasing.
Yeah.
But the rest of us, and especially the poorer ones, are finding themselves homeless because they cannot afford to. They can't find any place where they can buy, rent at a reasonable price.
Right. I think you and I have talked about this before, but 20 years ago when I moved to Sonoma County, or 25 years ago, there were no homeless people here. No one. I mean, you might see an occasional.
Out to San Francisco, it was a nice place to go.
Yeah, exactly. And now, you know, I think it started maybe 10 years ago. Now the homeless are everywhere to be seen.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's no doubt that we have a problem. Now, one could argue, okay, well, maybe the government is paralyzed and not able to do anything. Well, frankly, that's kind of silly because, you know, when we moved here in 1999, there were zero homeless. I mean, zero, zero.
Yeah.
The only place you could find homeless was in the Redwood area, Redwood Forest area, Monterio on the Russian River, you know, very low income area. You find some people living in the forest, to kind of, you know, in little shacks and stuff like that. But now, when you're in downtown Santa Rosa or in the, you know, areas, I mean, you don't know what it is, but there's homeless everywhere. In fact, on the weekends,
Yeah.
I mean, they're everywhere. I mean, really, it's amazing.
Well, and it's known internationally as a problem now.
Yeah.
And, you know, way back when I went back there many years before 2000, it was a really nice area. Mm-hmm. But, you know, but the prices of housing was outrageous.
That's right.
Well, with outrageous housing prices, people can't afford anything. And so you end up with lots of people who are living in their cars or whatever.
Yeah.
Teachers don't earn enough to support themselves,
right,
for example.
Right. Well, just the other day, it's just kind of a fun story. Just the other day, I met my wife and my son over at the Whole Foods shopping center, Whole Foods in Cottingtown in Santa Rosa. And it's, you know, pretty affluent, everything fine. I drive in there, and in my vehicle, BMW, and they're coming in the Volkswagen. And they pull up next to us, or close by, and I had pulled up right next to, I thought it was just a gentleman alone, but it turned out his girlfriend was in there too. They were homeless, you know, and living in their car. And mm-hmm. they were very friendly. I talked to them, you know, but I could tell that they are victims of this situation. They're perfectly decent people. I could tell that you're perfectly decent people. In fact, I had a conversation like I would have with you.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, this and there was just an article I saw someplace where they were talking about, you know, people out of school deciding that they would have sort of a biggish car and live in the car, and they move from city to city from time to time, and they would take jobs, you know, which probably didn't pay a whole lot more than minimum wage wherever they went. And I thought, well, this is going to have to be our lifestyle because we can't afford a house anyplace.
That's right. Mm-hmm. An architect told me several years ago that a one-bedroom apartment costs, in Santa Rosa, Sonoma County or Santa Rosa, costs about $700,000 to build.
Oh, goodness, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, there's not much space. The land prices are astronomical, and... anyhow, there's all kinds of other issues.
Right. Well, so it seems like we're doing okay, and CNN Business is saying that, you know, we're producing more and more crude, but you're suggesting that not all is well.
Not all is well. I mean, like I was saying, even if it's crude, it's not necessarily the kind of crude that we need, that the world needs right now.
Right.
You know, it does keep the consumers happy because they could drive their car even if there's no job to work to, mm-hmm. to drive to. And the grocery stores can't keep their shelves filled because they don't have the diesel for the farms or the air jet fuel to fly the food here from.
Mm-hmm. I want to return to that issue of why the Democratic Party wants to abandon the oil and gas consumption. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I know
I think that they want to give a narrative that makes it look like there's lots and lots of jobs available.
I see.
In the renewable sector, and all will be well.
I see.
Because you cannot tell people that the sky is falling.
Yeah.
This just does not work.
Right. Of course. You and I talked about that before. Yeah. Yeah, bad news bears are not going to get elected.
No, so you have to give them a narrative of we are transitioning to this wonderful new thing, and the government is subsidizing all kinds of jobs in this area, and everything will be wonderful. Just go buy your electric car. Just don't try to plug it in any place because we don't have the electricity for it. And we can't pave the road either, but you know, those details you get to figure out.
Do you believe that these people that say this believe that this is true, or do you think they're just, saying this because, well, they're going to get paid, it's a thing to say, do they really believe it?
Well, I don't, there's different people at different levels who believe different things. I mean, there's certainly a lot of people who think that recycling is going to save the world. Oh my goodness gracious, if we would just take our paper and plastic and put it in this bag, something magical is going to happen.
Right.
And I'm going, good grief, nobody will recycle paper and plastic.
Mm-hmm.
What are you talking about?
Yeah. Okay.
Cardboard if it's properly
separated
out, but you're not going to have, they don't understand, and they're not taking even clean paper and plastic.
Yeah.
It's stuff that's got food on it and stuff.
Well,
I don't know.
I won't keep you on the line much longer, but, and say in 5 years, I love these kind of questions, in 5 years, will you be shocked that we're producing more and more crude, or do you think at some point it's going to be obvious that we're going to go down?
I think there's going to be some, how this is all obvious, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's all tied in with the financial system. I think of a balloon inflating with more and more debt.
Mm-hmm.
Do you just have the balloon pop?
Mm-hmm.
Or what happens? You may have read that China is, the government is taking over the failing property business over there.
Right.
And you end up with that kind of thing happening, and you can kind of bring things down slowly.
Okay.
But, it's going to be the financial system and the governments that are going to be in the news, probably more than oil and gas, because it's just too obscure for people to understand.
It is obscure. Now, your readers, for example, last question, your readers are as astute as ever, or what is their general opinion? I mean, they're obviously coming to you because they respect you and want to hear what you want to say, but can you give me an idea of what they're thinking compared to, say, 4 or 5 years ago? Or, are you losing readers because there is more oil and gas? I mean, I'm just curious.
Things go up and down, and I get different readers. Everything runs in cycles, and some I've had forever and ever and ever. People had assumed things would fall apart earlier.
Yeah.
And in fact, the government forecasters were all saying that, we're going to enter a recession in 2023.
That's right.
But then they added more debt and more debt and more debt, more debt.
Exactly.
And the U.S. did relatively better than a lot of other countries. It turns out that our oil production was a little higher and our gas production was a little higher too. And our natural gas prices are really, really low.
Yeah, that's right. They are low.
Anyhow,
different
things help the economy. And so, we're doing better than anybody ever projected.
But we're building up a huge amount of debt, record pace of debt growth. Isn't that right?
Oh, it's just amazing. And
and
the interest rate, if you have inflation that continues, the interest rate has to stay up.
Right, exactly.
And so what happens is becomes the interest on that huge amount of debt becomes more and more of a big problem.
Right.
And you have to add debt just to cover the interest.
Well, I before I let you go, and I don't want to keep you longer than necessary, but here's what I want to say at the end here. I first started tracking a debt in 2016 or something like that. And I said, well, let me just look at the interest payments, the total interest the total interest costs on our debt compared to the revenue that we pull in. And back then, I think it was maybe 12%, something like that. Mm-hmm. All right. So you know, that number seemed really interesting to me because I said, right. Well, you pull in revenue and then you have a debt service cost, right? And if it's 12%, right. That's not a small amount. You know, that's pretty right. serious, right? Okay, and that's with interest rates, Gail, at like extremely zero, almost zero cost, right?
Oh, yeah. And so it's ridiculous. And you set everything up, yeah, it's all crazy. So, yeah.
I was going to add that I remember talking to some guy, big shot on Wall Street, you know, he's kind of showing off to me. And he says, well, okay, Pachauri, what do you predict, you know, say in 5, 6, 7 years? And I said, well, if the interest on the debt goes up, that is, you know, we have to pay more on the outstanding debt we have, then clearly we're going to default, you know, not too far off in the future. But of course, if interest rates don't go up, we can just borrow. And of course, I turned out to be correct. I mean, now we're apparently, and the Federal Reserve, the Federal Reserve and the U.S. Treasury will not disclose this information to the public because I think they'd be alarmed. But according to the numbers I understand to be true, we are now at plus 20% of revenue goes to paying the interest on the debt. It's over $1 trillion. Now they do fool around with the figures a little bit. They say that the trust fund earns interest or whatever, you know, but I think it's mostly BS. We're effectively 1/5 of our revenue goes to servicing the debt.
It's absurd. And then we've got, you know, more and more pensions to pay. I mean, right. Social Security and Medicare, you know, so it's also tied together. You know, it's going to be hard to tell what exactly went wrong.
Right.
And the fact that people don't understand the energy issue, even if it's the major thing, it's not going to be on the front page of the paper that
no,
way.
No. In fact, I will end this by saying that, in my opinion, and let's see if you agree, the oil situation is obscured by the fact that we are now 1/5 of our revenue goes to servicing the debt. So that's really what's going on. We're bad off in oil in terms of crude oil and energy. And the reason for that is, the oil and gas industry is not doing too well. And people are having to borrow money just to survive.
And the government keeps having to print money so as to, you know, pay all kinds of, it's all kinds of funny things for all of the green industry,
right.
But it's also for all of Social Security, all of the different kinds of programs for the low-income people, all kinds of different programs.
Yeah.
So it becomes hard to even earn enough money to do much better than you get from the government program.
Sure, exactly. Yeah. Well, Gail, it's always fun to talk to you, and I thank you so much. Any final comment? I mean, I know I've said what I wanted to say, your article was very good, and I hope you're doing well.
Yeah, I'm doing well. Thanks for calling.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.